This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by Home, Melbourne's first of its kind postpartum hotel where mothers are mothered. Like many of us, Genevieve Day grew up with the mindset that when you put in the hard work, you get rewarded. And as the founder of Day Management and Next of Kin Management, she's done just that. And so, as a successful business owner entering motherhood for the first time, Jen wanted to keep up appearances. She wasn't letting anyone think that a baby was going to slow her down, so she pressed on the only way she knew how. With hard work. But what Jen soon realised is that hard work doesn't always equate to success in motherhood, and not in finding the perfect balance as a working mum either. She's candid about what she'd do differently with hindsight, from allowing herself more time immersed in the baby bubble to how she'd navigate managing her team. More than that though, she's also open about her stressful breastfeeding struggles and how she moved through these as an overachiever, something that so many mums before her can relate to. Here, she talks about the first time she felt like her baby really chose her, what she's learned about navigating motherhood and career with the beauty of hindsight, and the painful chapters she was tempted to edit out of her new book, The Juggle. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the clever and kind Genevieve Day. Genevieve, you were afraid of motherhood. Maybe afraid is too strong a word, you can tell me, but you definitely had that fear that I had of what on earth will this do for my career and my life? Can you tell us a little bit about how that germinated in your mind going through your 20s?
Totally. And it's something I almost never thought about until I was trying to conceive, which is hilarious because, you know, it's almost you assume I'm going to get married and have kids. It's in my future. But I was so preoccupied with building my career and I had some incredible momentum. You know, I've been doing day management now for, I'm in my ninth, almost 10th year, which is crazy. And I was all career all the time. I was more than happy to work weekends and nights. And, you know, I just saw that end result was incredible and like a beautiful shining light at the end of the tunnel. And then when I started thinking about starting a family, I was like, oh, hang on, this very clear pathway that was just, you know, hard work and time and energy to get me there now looks like there's some obstacles in the way, and not calling my beautiful son an obstacle at all, but it just became more complicated. And I think fear is the right word. I was super afraid that if I get pregnant, if I stop something that I've been pushing and devoting time and energy into for the, you know, such a long period of time, will the business stop and crumble too? And that's such a backwards thought process that I can tell myself now. But yeah, I think I was super scared.
So I'm interested to know then, when you started actively trying to conceive without knowing what your conception journey was like, was there any sense of fear for being pregnant? Because as much as I was nervous about how a baby would impact my career, as soon as I wanted a baby, that's all I wanted. It was sort of like everything else just went to the wayside for a bit. How did that sit with you?
Yeah, I'm a planner, which is just my personality type. But it also meant that we, you know, trying to conceive, I really saw that as the next task. And so I went to a Chinese medicine doctor and I was getting my hormones in order. And that was like the year leading up to starting trying to conceive. And then I got married about 3 months before we conceived as well. So that was like my next task, was getting through the wedding. And then I thought, cool, now I can put my focus on having a baby. And within that planning, not only was I looking at my body and my hormones and how I was going to tackle that, but also looking at my business. And we did some kind of restructuring. We brought on a general manager. We put some, you know, barriers and processes in place to almost forward plan that I'm not going to be available 24/7 soon-ish. And so we kind of planned in that way as well. So as much as I was afraid it was going to interrupt momentum, I was also trying to put these, you know, stepping stones there to kind of safeguard the journey at the same time.
And so you've been in business 9 years. Let's take it back to young career Jen? She's left school, maybe she graduates. Where to from there until your baby comes to be?
Literally, so I finished school and straight out of the gate, I started working in PR. I was literally working part-time while I was doing my university degree in communication. And I was just one of those people, I wanted to be in the real world and get my hands dirty. And it was like, you know, the devil wears Prada to me back then, but with hindsight, not that sparkly. You're just working 80-hour weeks and being paid 40 grand. But I think I was just so enthusiastic about, yeah, getting my hands dirty in the industry. And so I've been in the industry itself for a super long period of time. And then I started my own business at 24, which is crazy to think, but I just saw this gap in the market and opportunity there. And so launched Day Management, which was, you know, one of the first of its kind digital first talent agencies. And so that was amazing. But also obviously when you're 24, you're not thinking about the future of how will I do this with a family or what could come next. And I had no idea if the business would even last that long or what was in front of me. So yeah, the career's been, it feels long, and I have some incredible staff who are like, you know, 23, and I seem so old to them as well. And it's been hilarious because in this evolution of the business and myself within the business, we've seen different arms of the company launch with TikTok. When I started was just Instagram. There was no Instagram stories back then. You know, the way we looked at talent in campaigns is so different now as well. So it's kind of been nice that the business has had this full evolution. And then myself personally has also had this big evolution. And to be honest, I feel like it's stronger than ever right now in this moment. And I've always found that being a mom has been a superpower because a lot of my job is relating to people, right? And ironically, one of the agencies I ran called Next of Kin Management is solely devoted to managing moms and marketing to moms. And I launched that because I saw an opportunity, but I wasn't a mom when I launched that. And there I am talking about, you know, toddler formula campaigns and Huggies and, you know, Woolworths for feeding your family. And I had no idea about this stuff. So yeah, that was kind of my career journey, started as someone young and enthusiastic and launched with opportunity. And then now I kind of have the greater empathy to relate to my talent and clients from being a mom.
I'm always amazed at someone that launches something so young, especially someone, I was quite entrepreneurial, but I could never make anything work. So that is incredible. Well done, firstly. So then you do fall pregnant. We know that you're a planner and basically could have been inside my brain. I went to the Chinese doctor, did all of that stuff too. How are you feeling both emotionally and physically as a business owner who has a baby coming?
Yeah, I think initially there was that doubt of like, how am I going to make it? And I love with your podcast, like, how do you make work work? That was literally what this was on loop inside my brain. Like, how am I going to make work work? But I also at the time had some beautiful naivety where I had no idea what it was like to have a baby and work at the same time. And so I agreed to things for future me, like postpartum me. I was like, of course I can come into the office at 3 weeks postpartum. Of course I can attend the Christmas function. I'll have a 2-month-old baby. I'll just leave him somewhere, I guess. Like it was kind of, yeah, that blissful ignorance was a lot of my pregnancy journey. And then I had a lot of pelvic pain. I got really big and really heavy. And that was really, you know, tough in my third trimester. But I was so committed to a fold, to showing up at work. And so I would come to the office and we were up a flight of stairs. And I was like, once I'm up, I can't go up and down. And so the girl was about for lunch. I'm like, can you please bring me back a sandwich? I can't walk up and down the stairs. And in those moments, I'm like, why the hell didn't I just work from home? But I think I was just wanted to almost in like a sense of martyrdom, prove that I could show up at work and prove that I could still do things. And I wanted to prove to my clients as well, like, this isn't going to stop me. Me being this pregnant isn't going to stop me. And I think that was like this whole pushing through mentality. And I worked until 39 weeks, which is just so dumb. And then went into maternity leave, which I do like inverted commas. And I had, I think, 4 days of rest before I went into labor. So I literally slept for those 4 days. I didn't leave bed. I just like had Netflix on. I slept the whole time and then like went into labor on day 4 or day 5. So yeah, I think was planning to have this time off, but also was agreeing to all these things that I had no reference point of what it was going to be like.
And do you think, I'm wondering in my head if it was partly two-pronged in that you didn't want to show your team that you couldn't do it. And also there's a lot of business pressures. You're the business owner. That's
that's a huge pressure. You can bring on other people and that's fantastic, but the buck still falls with you. So do you think those two things came into play heaps?
100%. And because I am so front-facing in the business as well, I didn't want to give a perception that I wasn't there or that my, you know, I wasn't on the prize. And especially in the work that I do, like, we are responsible for other people's careers. And so we're saying to them, oh, trust me with your business and your career, but I'm going to go over there and not be in the office and not be online. Like, I felt like I couldn't do that, despite that I have an incredible team who were there and, you know, they're so amazing and they do so much better work than me most of the time. But yeah, that was a really big part of it. I didn't want to have an image portrayed outwardly that I wasn't on it, which again, is so backwards.
And did you find that people were telling you to rest? Was there much advice or judgment or comment about, like, slow down, you've got a baby coming? Did you have to grapple with that much?
Do you know what's so funny? I almost felt really proud that I was pushing myself. And so when people were like, oh my goodness, how are you still working? I'd be like, you know me, like, I'm a hard ass. So I was just so proud to be putting myself in those positions to be seen as really tough, which I think is like the millennial women in us, right? We've been told just to soldier on and, like, save your tears for your pillow in the bedroom and all that kind of stuff. But definitely I did get some judgment for working so hard, but I've almost internalized it as like a compliment, which is BS.
We were like at the very end of the girl boss era. So I get that. Some things are really hard to, I guess, quiet in your mind because we're so programmed to work towards things. And then having a baby, which is the perfect segue, is sort of the opposite to working towards things. You can work as hard as you want. That doesn't really lead to anything with babies. Yeah. Tell us about the early days of meeting baby Henry.
It's so funny because I really struggled with that exact switch of being so productive all the time. And like, my days would be like, wake up, go to Pilates, go to the office, land a six-figure brand deal, like, attend huge meetings, do something else massive, then go to like a work event at night, and then come home and I'd achieved 1,000 things. And then I went to doing nothing but keeping this small human alive. And I found that really, really challenging to know, what have I done that day? And I then gave myself like little tasks to do around the house where it was like, okay, make a list of the things that I needed to get I never got around to. So I'm like, we need a new doormat. We need new kitchen scissors. We need photo frames. Okay, that's my job now. And it was like, I had to keep myself occupied for when he would sleep to do something so I could then like say to myself at the end of the day, you achieved something.
And did that make you feel like you achieved something? Like, did that work?
I mean, yeah, we really needed those kitchen scissors for a long time. I never to find them. But I think it did fill a void, definitely. And that was in the stage where my husband was still going into the office. He works in the business of me as well. But then he would kind of come home and I'd be like, what happened today? And like, what did you talk about? And what were the girls saying? So I still wanted to be tapped in. And I didn't really give myself that baby bubble, which is a bit of a regret of mine because that is such a beautiful time that you can never get back. And I spent it either giving myself jobs to do or tapping into work where I'd said I'd have time off. And then I'm in the inbox emailing my team being like, hey, I saw this come through. Like, what are you going to action? And they're all like, Jen, log off.
Yeah. So that's an interesting one that your husband works in the business. I imagine a bit of a blessing and a curse as the birth giver and primary carer in that regard. How on earth did you create boundaries there? And how did he approach your early days of motherhood as someone in the business?
Yeah, I mean, I love that question because I think it's something that we should have thought about more of how to set those firm boundaries. And it's hard because sometimes I wouldn't want to know anything that was going on because I couldn't just do things 10%. I'd want to know the full thing or offer my opinion and think that I should have had input to that situation. But then also he deserves someone to talk to about his day and to, you know, decompress at the same time. And it almost got to a stage where I was like, I can't know anything or I need to know everything. And so that's not, you know, sustainable in life because there are shades of gray in every situation. But yeah, that was a bit of a challenge too. And then, you know, he wanted to be home with Henry and I, but also he had to go to the office and do his job and stay connected, us as, you know, business owners too. So that was really hard. And I think if I do it again, I would want to have firmer boundaries where I'm like, don't talk to me at all about it. So I can just switch off. But I think I'd also now have more confidence that I can step away and the whole thing is not going to catch on fire.
Yeah, you can only learn through experience, which is the hard thing. We all have regrets. So I hope that you know that you did the best that you could in that experience. Do you think you felt resentment towards him, or did he feel the reverse from sometimes wanting to be home with the baby? How did that work?
That's so interesting. I don't think there was any resentment because we still had a lot of flexibility working for ourselves. So he could still stay home if we wanted to do that together, or like we attended all of the maternal health appointments together, which is such a luxury. If anything, I had resentment towards the people around me who were on maternity leave and could take 12 months off. And that really surprised me. And I was very fortunate that I had some of my closest girlfriends on mat leave at the same time. And I would look at them and I'm like, you get to be nap trapped without guilt, or yeah, you get just to watch Netflix when he sleeps and you're not working. And I found that really challenging and something I had to kind of sit down with and accept that I don't get that time. And it's crazy because I almost wished away the time that I did have, and I only took about 8 weeks of maternity leave, which isn't very much. But yeah, I feel like that was something that I really struggled with, because I would just be so resentful that people had all this time off and they weren't pulled in 1,000 different directions and they could just enjoy it. Or if their baby didn't go to sleep or took 45 minutes to settle, their mind wasn't like, hurry the fuck up, I've got 10, 15 emails to handle. Like, why aren't you going to sleep right now? I've got things to do. So yeah, that was more where the resentment was for me. But then also the benefit I kept reminding myself was the flexibility. The fact yes, that like now that those friends have gone back to work, you know, they're in an office 9 to 5, whether I can pick my son up from daycare to stay early if I want to spend more time with him. So I try and remind myself of the positives.
I could not relate to that more. I went back to a little bit of Ready or Not work very early. It was minuscule. I wasn't recording interviews. I was recording with Loz for Witching Hour, and I was just reviewing edits, adding intros. It was minor amounts of work at the start, and people would say, go easy on yourself, you just had a baby. And I'd say, but this is like a long game. I never want to work in an office 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And if people do, fantastic. I want that flexibility in the long term, which sometimes means like a bit of short-term pain, doesn't it?
Totally. And it's hard with the hormones and the lack of sleep to remind yourself of that. Well, I find that really difficult. And again, I'm like, no, I have so many benefits of working for myself. And even though it's a big business now, it used to be a small business. But yeah, I was like, this is a good thing. Like, you want to be a part of this. This is something that yeah, you're growing and nurturing as well as little Henry. So yeah, it just did require some love and attention. And the tricky thing for me was I wanted to take 3 to 4 months off. So I had him the 18th of September. I wanted to finish out the year on maternity leave and come back 2024. And I didn't really get that. And that really sucked. But again, yeah, if you think of the bigger picture, you know, it worked out the way it was meant to.
And let's go to breastfeeding now, because you are clearly a high achiever. And as most of us, we're used to putting out good work and getting reward. Breastfeeding, I think, can be one of those really challenging things in the postpartum, where if it doesn't work, it can really affect the baby attempted breastfeeder, for lack of a better word, affect their experience of how those early days pan out. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience?
Absolutely. And I think you're so right. It's linked to us thinking and feeling that if you put effort in, there will be a reward. I'm very accustomed to assessing situations in terms of ROI, you know, return on investment. And again, being a planner, before I gave birth, I had prepared the entire nursery. I'd bought the silverettes for my cracked nipples. I had the nipple cream. I had the pump ready to go. And I was like, I'm going to need a pump that I can just put in that I'm not tied to like wire and wireless, so that I could do things and do, you know, be productive while I'm pumping. And I'd like got all the nursery bras and everything was already pre-purchased, thinking this is something that I will be able to do. And then my birth was a little bit prickly in a sense that it wasn't super straightforward, needed lots of intervention. I coded a few times. He was posterior and got stuck. I lost over a liter of blood. And so initially, he didn't latch on me straight away. I think he also was in shock from the whole experience, and I was not in my best, healthiest self. And then in the hospital, I couldn't express anything, and I had lactation consultants, and I was trying, and then we'd try and put him on, and he had no interest, and he would just scream. And it was just this kind of like, yeah, marriage of circumstances that didn't equate to breastfeeding. And I had no supply. I was put on medication to try and help with that. Still nothing. I saw the lactation consultant. They told me to pump 8 times a day. And I did, I think, 6 to 7 times a day is what I could do, which is just a crazy time commitment as well. And my husband was amazing. He was like, I'll take care of everything else. You just pump and be with the baby. So I didn't have to think about like cooking or cleaning or anything else at that time. And I did that for a period of 6 weeks where I was getting 10 mils from each pump. And I mean, that's just like demoralizing, right?
I actually feel like nearly crying for you because I know what pumping feels like, and for it to be stressful is just, it's an unbelievable burden.
It's such a burden. That's the perfect word for it. And I think just that visual representation of your failure after you've pumped and you try not to look at it was the advice I was given. Like, just do the 30 minutes and I would take it off and it'd be 10 mils and I'd be like, cool, that's not going to be enough. So for 6 weeks I persisted, and then I was just like, it's just not happening. It's quite literally blood from a stone. And, you know, they say it could be related to my PCOS, is why I didn't have supply, or the blood loss at the time, it never kicked in. And then because he never latched, there wasn't that encouragement either. Or sometimes women just can't breastfeed. And that's something that's never spoken about. And it's been like, it's a, I want to say a closed wound now, but it was an open wound for a really long period of time. And I would see people on Instagram breastfeeding and I would just be like, oh my gosh, like my heart. Or, you know, when I would be out and about and people would just breastfeed their child and I was like, I'll just get my formula and mix this together to feed my baby. And it's just something that no one ever speaks about. And I even found it really challenging in the sense that, you know, in the hospital, they make you sign a form saying that I consent to give my child formula, even though I acknowledge breast milk is better.
I learned that just recently and I cannot believe that.
And you put up some incredible stories recently about feeding and challenges with feeding. And this is why I'm really passionate of speaking about it. And I'm like, I'm happy to be the poster child of people that can't breastfeed because there is none. Like no one else is putting their hand up for this. And I didn't think it was possible. And I felt like such a failure. And even the connection to my son, who I love so dearly, and obviously he's like the most beautiful source of joy in my life. For me, when he could give a little bit more back around like 3 to 4 months old, I was like, for the first time, I feel like he's choosing me because he could look at me and smile or like crawl towards me. I know I'm getting emotional. But yeah, I was like, finally he's choosing me because I wasn't the person that could keep him alive before then. Like I wasn't the sole person responsible for keeping him healthy and keeping him alive and feeding him. And again, what a gift to share that with my husband. And it meant that I could return to work easier. But when those moments happened, I was like, oh, he's choosing me for the first time.
Imagine a place where postpartum professionals who are mostly mothers themselves and who feel more like your aunties and cousins than staff cook wholesome food for you and your baby, wash, fold and put away your clothes, run magnesium-filled baths, massage your tired body, bring you cups of tea and nourishing treats to your plush bed. Take your baby overnight and have deep conversations with you about the beauty and pain of motherhood. While you sit your tired body down in the dining room, as smells of breakfast, tea and coffee fill the air. Morning light streams in and dances over a bowl of lemons, a big vase of flowers and soft tunes fill the space. No, this isn't some dreamt up land that we can only access in our sleep. This exists at home, the first of its kind postpartum hotel where mothers are mothered. After giving birth to her first child, Home founder Larissa Leone found herself lost in the very early stages of becoming a mother, an experience that is incredibly common. She had wonderful support but felt very alone and didn't want to let on that she wasn't coping. After finding herself in some very dark places, she decided to speak up because she knew she needed help. She was later diagnosed with postnatal depression and anxiety, and now Home's mission is to assist in the prevention of just that, of exactly what Larissa experienced, by providing holistic care, nourishment and support, all while nurturing and honouring one of the most profound shifts a human being can go through, the matrescence period.
Home is a place of soft spaces for hard things to land. A safe space that empowers you to forge your own path and provides the encouragement, education, and support needed for you and your family to thrive. To learn more about Home and the Home Trust, a registered charity that exists to provide financially supported stays to families in need, and to book your own stay at the place where mothers are mothered, visit home.com.au. That's home spelled H-O-M-B. Oh, that got me right in the heart because I can totally imagine that. I have two questions that came to mind when you were talking about. The first is when you talk about that sense of shame, when you're pulling out that formula bottle at the cafe opposite a stranger or a friend that's breastfeeding, do you genuinely, is it a sense of embarrassment doing that out in public?
It definitely used to be. Now yeah. I couldn't care less, but yeah. I definitely used to be shamed and embarrassed. And because, again, it happened to be that were people in my life that had newborns at the same time, where it would be like literally pulling it out of those same moments as well. And it was funny because he was always like a bigger baby and he's like chunky and healthy. And like, I love that about him. And people would stop me in public, like older ladies, and they'd say, oh, he's so gorgeous. Is he breastfed?
Oh.
It almost like the insinuation that like, he's so healthy, he must be breastfed. And also that's really inappropriate. Like literally a David Jones lady asked me that and almost made me cry. I think he was like 3 months old at the time. And I said to her, like, that's a really inappropriate question because you don't know anyone's journey.
Good on you for saying that.
Oh, that's my toxic trait. I'm happy to tell people off.
Well, you almost have to, because if you're willing to fly the flag for people, then that's unfortunately what you have to do. So I'm very impressed that you're able to do that. The second question that came to mind was, you say that it's now a closed wound, but it was open for a while. How did you close that wound?
Ooh, I think just time. I feel like just time and acceptance and peace. And, you know, it's even funny, like there, I won't name it, but there's a very popular book about feeding your child, which feeds, you know, everyone kind of follows that Instagram page and has that book to feed their child and starting solids and everything. And I found that even reading that was triggering for me because so much of the literature was like breast milk is better than formula or breast milk is number one. And so I closed it, gave it to my girlfriend. And so that was also part of my healing, was like not putting myself in situations where I would be judged and not surrounding myself with content that would trigger me in that way. Yeah. And then just knowing that like he's thriving, like he's in the 90th percentile of height and weight. He meets his milestones, some of them even early, if I'm allowed to brag about him. So I think just that was like the physical representation that he's going to be okay. And yeah, I think it's been, you know, tricky that it's something that I'm never going to experience. I mean, who knows if baby number two happens, but most likely won't happen for me. But yeah, just time. Time heals most wounds.
And just last one on that, because it was such a big poll that we put up on our Instagram stories and such a big thing that characterizes so many parents' journeys. If you could go back to that mum that was pumping, not yielding, what was really worth it for you? I hope you don't mind me wording it like that, but I just feel terrible for you putting yourself through that. What would you tell that new mum that is struggling with supply about just her ability as a mum and all of those things that we tie to breastfeeding, which we shouldn't?
Yeah, I think just that like you are enough and like you still love your baby even if you can't feed your baby that way. And like that is not the pinnacle of motherhood, despite it being heralded as that. Like there are so many other ways you can show up for your child. And like I still did all the overnight feeds with the bottle and had all those moments with my baby. And yeah, I think I would definitely tell myself, like, you don't have to put yourself through it. So, and again, like the benefits were massive. Like I was a bridesmaid for one of my best friends at 5 weeks postpartum, which, you know, I didn't look great in that dress. We'll just say that much. But, you know, with the feeding component, it was quite easy for me to spend almost a full day away from him because I knew that my partner and I parent 50-50, were able to do that because we use formula. Yeah. So yeah, the benefits came through thick and fast at the same time. But yeah, looking back, I would just tell myself that like, this isn't the pinnacle of parenting. Like you're going to show up for this kid in so many ways. And even though you may feel like less of a woman, which is crazy, like you still, you know, created this baby, you birthed this beautiful boy and you can feed him formula and he's going to be just fine.
That's a lovely message to anyone, and I'm sure there'll be plenty in the depths of going through that as we speak. So then let's talk more about the more formal return to work. I feel like I'm gathering you talk about 8 weeks that felt a little bit more formal, even though you were tapped in. Then what happens from there?
Yeah, so it was around the 8 week mark, and I'd done a little bit of work scattered here and there during that time. I figured that I was logging in so much by that stage. I'm like, I'm just going to take the out of office off my inbox because I'm not even respecting it myself. And then by replying to people, it's confusing anyway. So I kind of came back at 8 weeks. It was more of like a part-time situation. I mainly did 2 days a week in the office. And again, thankfully, I could let my parents or my husband's parents look after Henry and leave the formula tin and be like, you're going to be fine. So I could, you know, had the luxury to do that.
And what a gift, because grandparents, as we know, are just an absolute gift.
Such and so fortunate that we have family support. Like, that was amazing. So yeah, that was kind of the 8 week mark. And then I would work on the other days around his sleep schedule and log on when he napped, or work nights if I had to. And my husband and I would try and do it 50-50, but that was not a perfect way to handle it because things pop up and then he'll have a meeting and I had a meeting, like, who has the baby? So we had to really work through that with scheduling and getting super strict on like who looks after Henry so we can both do our jobs. And then around 4 months postpartum, we got a nanny and an additional day a week. So we had family support for 2 days and a nanny for one day as well. And then again, Pat and I would do 50-50 on the Monday and Friday. But the thing about beautiful Henry is he hated day sleeps. So unlike some babies who would nap for like 2.5 hours and give you time to do things, he's like, I think I prefer to be awake.
You're both here. I'd love to hang out with you.
Literally. He's like, do you know what's way more fun than this? Going to the park and being on the
street. And he's right, to be fair.
Yeah. He had his priorities right. So that was a challenge in the sense that I was like, I couldn't do a heap of like meetings or client facing stuff, or I would have to go out and go to the office in those days to get like dedicated work time. So we kind of did that for a number of months. And then I was basically full-time around like 6 months. When he was 6 months old, I was full-time working hours, but again, like smooshing full-time hours into random chunks of the day. And then at the moment, again, the flexibility is amazing, where like we spend our mornings with him and my parents will arrive at like 9:30 and we'll go to the office by 10.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And even that just feels like such a luxury that we can have a full morning with him. And when he goes to daycare, we can pick him up a little bit early on Mondays because we have that flexibility as well. So now he's in daycare, now that it's one, yeah, daycare 2 days a week and then parents 2 days a week. And we decided to move from a nanny to daycare as it was just more consistent. And I thought that he could benefit from the interaction and the other kids and the socialization and everything.
And you run a pretty big business now. How do you go when there's no sleep happening at nighttime? How do you manage that one? Or is he a good night sleeper?
No. Well, he is.
Actually, no. I know why I'm asking that, because I've seen stories on your Instagram of you spending time in the bedroom with him.
Oh, yes. It took Henry 11 months to sleep through the night. And that was a really huge test. And I think even in those early days, a lot of like when I struggled to cope with having a newborn and having these demands on me with working, it kind of all was because of sleep. I almost felt like if he could sleep better, I'd be able to cope better and perform better. But no, sleep was not the gift that he was given. Yes, he just woke all the time. He didn't like going to sleep. So settling him would take a really long time as well. We would sometimes spend like 40 minutes on the bouncy ball and then he'd sleep for like 30 minute naps. And we're like, cool. It was more time bouncing you than actual sleep. And then overnight, yeah, he didn't sleep through the night until 11 months. So again, I just kind of would see other parents at work, and I work with a lot of parents, which is awesome. And it's like that knowing glance of like, did you have a good night? Are we all operating on 3 hours sleep? And again, it becomes like a superpower because you just have to push through and eventually you do kind of climatize.
Yeah. And how do you feel in terms of depletion and energy now that he does sleep through? I'm sure it's not every single night, but I'm hoping that sleep has improved. How has that helped you in your mindset?
Oh, immensely. And he's on a good stretch right now, which I know will not last forever. But again, I appreciate the good stretches now because I've been through so many bad stretches. But yeah, I think your mental health is so linked to how much rest you're getting too. And I almost don't know how I was operating on such little sleep and such interrupted sleep. it's funny, initially when he slept through, I was exhausted. It's almost like, you know, when you go on holidays and you get really tired from being on holidays.
Or you get sick, like that's when you get sick. Your body rests and you get ill.
Totally. It was almost that experience. My body was like, oh, I am actually really tired because the adrenaline stopped. But no, he is sleeping really well now, touch wood.
Oh, the mental health link has been huge. Posey's finally getting somewhere. And I was genuinely feeling a little bit depressed. And now I'm like, oh, I feel lighter. I feel like a human again. So we need to talk more about that because I think it's a massive one for mums. You said you took a lot of missteps as a leader in the return to work phase. Can you talk a little bit about that with some hindsight, what you learned and what those missteps were?
Totally. I think overcommitting myself and what I was capable of giving others was massive. And again, I wanted to prove that like this won't stop me or this won't get in the way of me being how I usually show up for people and how I, you know, always put others first, whether it's my talent or my team. And I didn't know what it was like to have a baby and again, have no sleep and have all those demands on you. And I think that I wasn't honest enough about what I needed from other people in those moments. And so I did things like I showed up to a performance review for a team member when I didn't prepare at all, really, or I, you know, made a few dot points, but I wasn't able to adequately look at their data and performance and invest in them as a person because I was just in survival mode. And so I showed up for that performance review 3 weeks postpartum. I'm still wearing a nappy myself in that stage. And again, this person's young, they don't have kids, they don't know or maybe care. But I really look back at that and regretting the fact that I didn't say, hey, I actually need more time to give you what you deserve in this moment because I'm a leader too. And I think instead I pushed myself for others. And yeah, you know, backfired on everyone in those examples. So, and again, even with those 8 weeks, if I logged off properly, that would have empowered them all to do their jobs without me chiming in remotely, not knowing full context of things, but being like, hey, I heard this thing happen in the office. Like, what's the deal with that? So yeah, I think I definitely learned to step back and allow others to do their job properly, but also be really honest that I'm like, hey, I'm in this baby bubble. I need your support during this time.
And what did you learn about your team in that period then? Because obviously there had to be a bit of letting go. Did that help you to delegate responsibility and does it help the way you work today?
Absolutely. And look, they all thrived. And then part of me like hates admitting that. I'm like, oh, wait, you don't need me to do a really good job. But yeah, they totally thrived. And again, it allowed people to step up and make the call on things without me. And I think that's something that often business owners and entrepreneurs struggle with is the fact that like, yeah, it used to be just me and I have my say and my fingerprints on everything, but now it's bigger than that. And that's such a good thing. And something that I've always wanted was to scale it to this size, but definitely the act of letting go took me having a baby to do properly. And I've taken holidays. Like I was in Italy last year and I logged on every single day and I was like, what's happening and how did this go? And you know, I wasn't able to step away until I had a baby. And again, for hypothetical number two, I think it'll be really different again, being like, I know you guys can handle it. I'm not going to contact you for 2 months now.
And please don't contact me because I'm going to lie down a bit more.
Yes.
This takes me to your next big project, which is working on a book called The Juggle, which is interviewing Australian mums about the idea of having it all and how there's no such thing. And firstly, before we get to the actual writing of the book and how it came together, I'd love to know how you came up with the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, we spoke about the fear that I felt when I was pregnant. And I am very fortunate in the sense that I work with some incredible mums and mums who have like $100 million businesses or mums that have a team of 300 or people just with careers that I really admire. And so when I was pregnant and working with them, I would always like weave into the conversation. I'm like, by the way, you seem to be nailing this. Like your Instagram is perfect. Your kids are gorgeous. And you seem to go on holidays and your business is thriving. Like how the hell is this happening? Because I would like a bit of that, please. And so I had these conversations all the time and the women would often be super honest with me and be like, oh my gosh, Jen, I cried this morning. Or they'd say, there's no way I'm nailing this. Like I am struggling right now. Or I feel like a really shit mom because I missed my kid's first day at daycare. And I felt like those situations weren't spoken about enough for these women that have these big followings and have these thriving businesses. It's so easy to put it on a pedestal and be like, oh my gosh, well, she's got it all figured out. So there was kind of these nuggets that I felt within these conversations that really had to be shared because I knew that I wasn't alone in feeling the way that I did, feeling that I had to choose between career and family, and then just kind of like feeling, have I made the right choice, whichever one you choose. So that's where the idea of the book came from. And yeah, it's been an amazing process and, you know, very selfish of me to write something that I benefited from in real time as well, because I interviewed them
all.
Yeah, efficient, right?
Yeah.
So I did all the interviews while I was pregnant, and there were people like Steph Claire Smith or Frank Body's Jess Hatzis, Erin Deering, celebrity stylist Lana Wilkinson, and, you know, Jessie Stevens, who I spoke to her right before she gave birth. And I love that kind of conversation contrasting to Lana Wilkinson, whose kids are like 12. So yeah. It was kind of a beautiful, yeah, case study of like, how the hell do these women have it all? And the answer is like, none of them feel like they do.
Yes. And so how did you actually go about writing the book? Did that feel like, I mean, how did you even fit it in?
Yeah. I mean, you can tell from this conversation I'm a little bit crazy. But again,
just efficient.
Like, super efficient. Exactly. So I took the first 4 weeks of postpartum as just time without having to think about the book. And I'd had all the interviews done beforehand. And then once he was 4 weeks old, I thought, time to roll up my sleeves and do this. And he was on like a 4-hourly feed schedule. So I would do the last feed at 10 p.m. and then I'd write until 2 a.m., feed him again, and then I'd go to sleep.
Oh my God, you are very efficient.
But also I did feel this calling of like, women are going to benefit from this and, you know, this is going to help people. And also I got to benefit from it in real time as well, because then I would be like, am I going back to work too soon? You know, Rachel Corbett from The Project, she said that she went to work at 4 months postpartum and it was the best thing she ever did. I'm like, okay, cool. This is helping me as I'm in the midst of it, in the trenches.
And when you love something, you just can't put it down. That's what I feel about Ready or Not.
Absolutely. And so I was able to smash out most of it in, I think, like 2 or 3 months. I wrote most of the book, which is about, what, 50, 60,000 words, you know, walk in the park, really. And then it took a massive amount of time to edit it all together. And that was also a bit of a gift, because I got to revisit these chapters when I was further along the journey. And it was so tempting to edit out the pain I felt at 4 weeks postpartum, or some of the more darker chapters where I was like, oof, like you were really hurting then. Yeah. And so it's kind of like, it was a bit of a time capsule in that sense. And I left them in there because I think too often we tell stories when we're out of the woods being like, you'll get through it, it'll get better.
Totally. And you can never remember afterwards. You can say it was hard, but you can never remember the depths of how you were feeling.
Yes, totally. So I wanted to kind of preserve that a little bit, that like, yes, at 6 weeks, I did feel this, and I did feel this at 4 months. And then now at 1 year, I'm all healed.
I'm perfect. We're all fine.
Perfect.
It's all good. The wound is closed.
Yes.
Jen, before I let you go, I've loved talking to you. I'd love to know if you could go back and give new mum Jen one piece of advice, and then the proper, we'll call it proper returning to work Jen one piece of advice, what would they be?
I think new mum Jen, I'd just say to be kind to yourself, that you don't have to have it all figured out, and to go easy on the developmental books. I was, again, like thinking, and I felt all this like pressure, like if I don't develop this kid's brain, I'm going to let him down as a mum and as a parent. So I was like, he would wake up and I'm like, here's a black and white book, like straight away. So yeah, definitely just like calm down. It's all going to be okay. And then for returning to work, mum, I think just like knowing you've made the right choice, like whatever that choice is, you know what I mean? Like we don't trust ourselves.
I love that. And also we all have our own journeys. So I think sometimes as mums, we can accidentally project what we think someone else should do without even meaning to, whether that's like the go easy on yourself to the busy mum, or the, oh, you have no time to yourself to the stay at home mum. I think we can accidentally, even with good intentions, sometimes project onto other mums, and it just makes us all feel guilty. But I think that's a beautiful message. Whatever your choice is, it's the right choice for you.
I love that. And also to add on being like, it's not about you. I think I had to learn how to take it personally. Yes. Whether I saw my friend is staying home longer and delay going back to work, or that, you know, my sister-in-law is breastfeeding all the time and doesn't want to use formula and all that kind of thing. It's like, none of that is about me. None of those choices has anything to do with me, and it may tug on my wound, and, you know, that's my issue to kind of heal from. But yeah, I think that's a big piece of advice I wish I could have heard earlier.
That is such a great sentiment and piece of advice to end with. If people want to find your book or you online, where should they go?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Genevieve_day and my DMs are so open for people that want to talk about if you couldn't breastfeed either or you return to work really early. You can get my book in limited bookstores or via the Brio Books website. It's also in my bio and I'm sure it'll be in the show notes of this very chat.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.